So any type of metal material, okay? So it could have been gold, could have been silver, but I think usually Rashi translates nascha as a tongue of silver, okay? So
What's the first word? Tongue?
nascha, it's a piece, a raw piece,
Okay.
not a coin, not just a raw
Okay.
piece of precious metal.
Okay. But
So
any
it's,
precious metal.
yeah,
Well, in this case, it says silver.
I've heard people translate it as gold, but I think usually
It
it's
could be
translated as
silver.
silver. Usually it means silver, yeah. It's definitely not Bitcoin, right? So
Bitcoin costs a hell of a
he
lot more.
grabbed.
Excuse my English.
Well, it depends
No,
which
by the
day.
way,
Depends which
$1 is
day.
now $88,000,
So I'm saying, depends which day, yeah.
$82,000.
So they thought to say that we'll compare this to the case of Naschad Rabbi Abba. And what's the case? Let's go now to a different story, then we'll go back to this original case and see if we can compare it or not. The Ahu Gavra, there was this person, the Chotaf Nascha Mechavre. He grabbed, Chotaf means to grab. You know, he didn't just take, he literally grabbed Nascha Mechavre, the tongue, the piece of metal from his friend. Also Lekame the Rabbi Ami. And he came in front of Rabbi Ami. Who came in front of Rabbi Ami? The other person. Yeah, we just about started the second story. So one person grabbed a piece of silver from his friend, and the friend, the one that was stolen from, went to Rabbi Ami, and he is summoning
You
him
said
to court.
grabbed, and now you said stolen.
You're right. You're
Grab
actually
is
right.
to take. Steal
means I'm taking his side,
is a more permanent thing.
and it means that I'm
Whereas
taking his side.
grab,
Yeah.
yeah.
So he
Sorry
went.
for.
He went to complain to Rabbi Ami, and he said, "This fellow man stole,
Lakachti
grabbed.
there would be to take.
Yeah, chataf. He grabbed. Now it's clear that he was the one that was holding the piece of silver, the person that came to complain, right? But the person that grabbed it had a claim. What was his claim? Let's see. Have Yosef Rab Abba Kame. Rabbi Abba was sitting in front of Rabbi Ami. Because if you remember, we called the story Naschod Rabbi Abba, because Rabbi Abba is going to make the final comment soon. So either way, it seems like Rabbi Ami was the teacher and Rabbi Abba was the student. Because usually you say the student was sitting in front of the teacher. So Rabbi Abba was sitting in front of him, in front of Rabbi Ami. Okay, second to last line at the bottom of page Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, if you're looking for it. Aisi Chad Sado, he brought one witness, the Michtif Chotfa, that he grabbed it from him. So Mr. A, the person that was originally holding the piece of silver, brought a witness that testifies that Mr. B grabbed it away from his arm hand. Oh, okay. So what's the response? Mr. B has to respond to the witness, because before we go any further, we must know the halakha is, this is relevant for this whole discussion, the Torah says that you need to have a pishnayim eidim yakum davar. There's two witnesses that will establish something if it's true or not. What if you only have one? So the Torah says, lo yakum eid echad be'ish, one testimony should not stand up and will not be able to obligate a person.
In other words,
so
the
Gemara,
the quality of the person who's coming to testify doesn't matter if the Rosh Yeshiva or someone who
doesn't, exactly, right. But the Gemara, the Talmud is Medayik, which means the Talmud derives that it says one testimony, one witness should not be able to stand up to be valid as a regular witness to take out money. I forgot the exact words of the Pasuk. It doesn't say literally to take out money. For money, it doesn't work. But to obligate the person that you're coming against with a shvua, with an oath, that one testimony is good. And that's biblically speaking, midaraisa, one testimony is strong enough to make the opposite guy have to take a shvua, an oath, that what he's saying against the testimony, against the witness. So, there's one witness that says you grabbed it. What does he respond? If he would respond, I did not grab it, halacha will be simple. We're going to tell him, he says you grabbed it, you say you didn't grab it, take an oath, because it's one witness. But he said a little different. He said, Omar Lay, last line, Omar Lay, he said to him could be to the witness or to the person that took him to court, but the point is, this was his claim. In means yes, chotfi, I grabbed the piece of silver, the didi chotfi, but it was my piece of silver that I grabbed. So he's admitting to the action. He says, yes, what you saw and what you're testifying in court is correct, that I grabbed a piece of silver, but I'm telling you, I grabbed it because it's mine, it belongs to me. Whatever the story is, how he got his hands, maybe he stole it from me, whatever it is, but it belongs to
it's
me.
It's easier for you to read here, take it, because I'm listening rather than reading. I
okay,
can't,
no, no
I
problem.
Can't, I have a problem seeing.
Yeah, okay, I always look on the computer. Okay.
No, but I'm saying it's easier for you to read from this.
Yeah, thank you. Omar Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Ami said, Rabbi Ami said, what are we going to do in such a case? This is first the teacher speaking, and then Rabbi Abba will respond. Rabbi Ami said, Heichi nidainua daine lahai dina. How should us dayanim, us judges, rule this case? He's going to go through different solutions that would have worked in our, if the case would have been a little different, and then we'll see what to do in our case. Lishalem, should we say that you pay? So let me first do it outside just. Okay, Rashbam also summarizes, this could have worked out in three different ways if the case would slightly be different. The most simple case would be if two people would come and say in front of court that Mr. B grabbed this piece of silk from Mr. A, and we don't care what Mr. B says, even if he says, it's mine, it's always been mine, and he stole it from me, it doesn't matter. Because true right witnesses. Now the two witnesses are saying, you grabbed it. And we have a chazaka kol ma'asha tachas yod adam hu shaloi. It's an assumption, anything that's in your hand, when it comes to metaltilin, movable items, movable objects is always assumed that it's in the real, true possession, ownership of whoever is currently holding it onto it, or if it's in your house, whatever it might be. So two witnesses saying he grabbed it from him would have been a definite ruling, you must give it back. I don't care what you say, bring some proof if you have a claim on him. The other extreme, if this would have played out that there is no witnesses at all, rather Mr. A and Mr. B come to court, Mr. B is holding on to the piece of silver, and Mr. A says, Mr. B grabbed it out of my arm. Now, if Mr. B says the same thing he said here, but there's no witnesses, he says, yes, I did grab, he admits, he says, yes, I did grab it out of his arm, his hands, but it's mine. Then court would be on Mr. B's side. Because
possession is not
because at the end of the day,
in English.
at the end of the day, we see it currently in Mr. B's hands. And he has a very basic level, which means a strong level of a migu, what we said the past 2 weeks we mentioned it, migu, that he could have just said, never happened, I don't know what he wants from me, this guy just saw me holding a beautiful piece of silver on the street, so he took me to court, this has always been mine, and we would have left him alone for sure. So because, even though he's not saying, you know, disassociating himself that much, but he's really admitting to have grabbed something, but because he has this migus, so we believe him on this that he says, that he grabbed it because it's his. That's if there's no witnesses. So it would have been very clear ruling if there's two witnesses, Mr. A's side, if there's no witnesses, Mr. B's side. If there would be one witness, so we also mentioned before, it would also be a clear ruling had he contradicted that one witness.
With a sworn declaration.
But that's only, so again, here there's also one witness, but the difference is like this. If the one witness comes and says, Mr. B grabbed this piece of silver out of Mr. A's hand, or out of his drawer, and the court turns to Mr. B and says, what's going on? And he says, never happened. This has always been mine. Maybe he saw something else, maybe he saw someone else, but this is my piece of silver. I never went to grab it from this person. So then we would say, the halacha says, one witness is valid as far as to take an oath. And what's the oath going to be? Exactly going against what the witness says. You say I grab, I'm taking an oath. No, I did not grab this piece of silver. The problem here is, and as we'll spell it out in these lines, that he can't take that oath now. He can't say, no, I didn't grab it, because he himself admitted that he did grab it. He said, in chotfi, yes, I grabbed. So you can't take an oath against the one witness if you're not going to contradict it. That's an interesting halacha, because what are you going to say? He says, you grabbed it. He says, I'm taking an oath that I grabbed it, but it's mine. The witness never came to discuss with you if it's yours or not. He came to testify on an action that you did, taking it from him. If your oath is not going to go against him, so you can't really absolve yourself of that oath. So you're kind of stuck. That's going to be what the Gemara is going to say here. You're really stuck. There's an obligation to take an oath because there's one testimony on Mr. A's side, but you can't actively do it. I'm just going to start again from the top of the Amud. Hey, chinedan, you odayin lehaydina. How should the judges rule this case? Lishalem, shall we tell him that he has to pay because there's a witness that says, together with the owner, that you grabbed it, lekotre sadi. There are no two witnesses. There is no way that a proper court would make someone pay if there's no two witnesses. What about lift today? Shall we exempt him and say, well, there's no two witnesses, you can go home and keep it? No, we can't just let him go without anything. Ikochad sado. There is one witness. And one witness requires us to do something and not just let him go home without any oath. So natural solution would be the third option. Lishtaba, he should swear. Ha'amar, but he said, Michtif Chatfa, he said that he did grab it. The case, so now the next half a line, some people don't actually have in their Gemara additions, because it doesn't fit very well with the flow and the reasoning that I told you outside. The reasoning I told you outside is based on what everyone explains as Gemara, but we can make it fit in. Kevin de Omar de Chotfa, being that he said that he grabbed it, Havaleke Gazlan, he is like a thief. What does it mean like a thief? So the way you explain it, if you do have these three words, Havaleke Gazlan, so I believe the Rashbam, or someone explains it, basically in regards to this oath, he's already made himself a thief. Meaning to say, what could you do already? He can't take an oath at this point anymore and say, I didn't grab it, because he already said he grabbed it. So obviously he's not saying that he's a thief, and of course the court doesn't look at him as a thief because there's only one witness, but in regards to the oath, he is valid as much as a thief that he can't take the oath because he's gonna contradict himself. So what are we going to do? Omar Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba ruled, and this is why it's called Naschot Rabbi Abba, because Rabbi Abba, in fact, responded after he saw this deliberation in front of his teacher Rabbi Ami. He said, indeed, even though there's no two witnesses, the ruling will end up being the same. He's going to have to pay. Have a mechuyev, because this is the category of have mechuyev shvua she'enoy yochol lishova. He is someone that is obligated with an oath that is incapable of taking that oath. Eino yochol lishova. And this is the ruling, and anyone that's obligated in an oath but cannot take that oath, Mishalim will have to pay as a result of that. Because he's not able to absolve himself of this real obligation. Okay? So this case seems to be clear. We're just trying to figure out if we can compare it to this case. But this is I don't know why, but somehow it became a very famous case in Yeshivot. It's a very famous case. There's a lot of things to discuss about it in this. And we won't go so deep involved because as far as understanding the basic ruling, it's clear based on the Rashbam the way we learned it. I'll mention one thing that's interesting is what should this person, this one witness that's coming here, what should he be thinking? He knows that he might be causing... Forget about this specific case. But in a regular case of one witness, and one witness knows that he causes an oath, that's the type of obligation that he brings. He doesn't bring payment obligation, but he causes an oath. So if this one witness knows that he's doing that he's testifying the truth, he knows that the person that he's going to go against will, because of him, have to take an oath and he's going to swear falsely. If he takes an oath that's false, should the one witness feel like maybe I'm causing it? In other words, does this fall into the category of lifnei iver leisitin michshel? There's a mitzvah that we should not put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, right? So, and this involves someone that's blind in an aveda aspect, right? If someone's going to come eat in your house and he trusts you and he eats whatever you serve him, so if he's a Jew, you have an obligation to feed him kosher food, not just because, right? In other words, it's also an obligation for you, not just for him to check what he's eating. So maybe the one witness shouldn't show up to court at all.
That's what same as Mari signed.
That's not simple the same.
In terms of this. You assume if you see a rabbi eating in a tray place.
Oh, you're saying why he can
It's similar. Right. You assume that the place is kosher. The same here. You go into someone's house, you assume that the food is kosher.
So we're talking about the guy, the host.
No, I understand.
Right. I'll tell you a case that actually spoken about. And because it's a Talmud shir, so we're not speaking halachically speaking, I'm not giving any rulings, but it's spoken about by the rabbis. What do you do if you are, so on Shabbat, we spoke a little bit, on Shabbat, if someone is deathly ill, then there's no barriers. You can go to a Jew and you can do all types of melachot, you can do all types of things that are generally prohibited on Shabbat, and biblical prohibitions, like lighting fires and cooking, all types of things, you could do it to save a life. No barrier. But if someone is sick, but he's not sick with a life-threatening illness, so what do we do in such a case, right? What's the question? The question is like this. A non-Jew is allowed to do work for you. If you're sick to a certain level, sick but not deathly ill. Similarly, a Jew can do certain melachot that are not biblical, derabbanan, right?
Yeah.
So, if you're going to go to a Torah observant doctor, so he'll know, right? Your situation is not life-threatening. So he'll only treat you through methods that do not involve biblical melachot. What if there's no... So the best thing for sure would be to go to Orthodox doctor. What if there's no Torah observant doctor in town, but there's a Jewish doctor that's not Torah observant? So here's where the issue might come up. You're going as a patient, and it does not keep Shabbat, but it should be, and he might do something that's biblically forbidden, not just with Rabban. So should you avoid going to that doctor because lifnei b'lisitin lichshon?
Right? If it's to save a life, yes.
But we're talking about someone that's not deathly ill.
No. But who decides if you're deathly ill or not?
You're saying the doctor, right? So should you avoid going to the doctor because maybe based on, well, actually some cases regular people could decide also. Should you avoid going to him because he might do a malacha? So some people are lenient. They say at the end of the day, you're not asking, you can tell him clearly if you want, but you're not asking him to do things that are deraisa, and you don't want that kind of treatment, right? And similarly, this is obvious. Am I allowed to put an alarm on my house to keep my possessions safe? Yes?
Yeah.
But what about, well, what if it's going to be a thief? And he's going to be Jewish? And he's going to activate the alarm on Shabbat?
Shomer Shabbos.
I'm causing a Jew to... So we don't have to necessarily think that far, right? Mm. So the question is about the doctor. But the case of the alarm is just to bring the extreme opposite, that we don't have to start expecting that this action might lead to something. If I'm acting like a normal person and doing the regular protocol, so to speak. Anyways, so here the question would be, should he not come to court? But the basic answer would be that you come, you testify what you have to do. First of all, you never know if someone else might join up with you and have the same thing to say, and then it will be a matter of just making him pay and not chas v'shalom make someone take an oath falsely. But that's just an interesting question that comes up. Okay, so we're trying to figure out if we can bring a proof. Yes, what?
If you know testimony,
yeah, but the pashtas, that is, if you're able to accomplish that, the person should pay him. You're right. If you're able to help someone win a court case, then you should show up. So the question is,
well,
this falls into that category.
If you can.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. Yeah. Okay.
I didn't hear.
Yeah.
Getting old. Hearing.
I need an enunciate.
All right. So. The question is, can we compare it to our story? Again, quickly going over our case, our story was, there's a person that is coming to a fellow man and says, why are you on my property? And the person says, I purchased it from you and I sat here for 3 years. The only thing is that he has only one witness that says that he was here for 3 years. So we're trying to compare, we're trying to say that, just like in the case of the piece of silver, there was only one witness. So he can't go against the witness and say, I didn't grab it, because he says, I did grab it, and it's just mine. So he has to pay as a result of not being able to absolve himself of the oath. So too, in our case, we're attempting to say that, not just, obviously the land is going to go back. The Rashbam really explained close but also, the land for sure is going to go back, because you don't have sufficient testimony. But the fruits that you ate for these 2 years, you're going to seemingly have to pay it, because there's one witness that says you ate fruit for 3 years. You can't take an oath against him and say, no, I did not eat, because you yourself are saying, yes, I ate this land for 3 years. You're only saying that I ate it, but it was mine, because I purchased it from you. But because there's no two testimonies, and because you can't take the oath, so you would have to pay back to the original owner all the worth of all the fruit that you ate till now. Does that make sense, the comparison? The Gemara is going to say that it does make sense, besides for one detail, which really changed everything. I'm going to have Abaye says like this. I'll say it outside first. At the end of the day, there's a big difference. Who brought the one witness in the case of the piece of silver? The person that is trying to get his piece of silver back, the one that originally had it, he's bringing a witness to go against the guy that currently has it, and eventually actually it works to make him have to pay because he can't take an oath. In our case, it's the person that wants to keep the land. It's the, I guess, the defendant. He is the one that brought that one witness. He didn't bring him to make it to obligate himself. He brought this witness to, as an attempt to prove his point that it belongs to him. So it's a little absurd to use that his own witness against him. Right? We're not just saying that it's absurd and therefore don't do it because it's absurd, but we're also saying he brought that witness and that witness came for that purpose. He really came to court for the purpose of supporting him. Let's see the words of the Gemara and maybe we'll see what Rashbam has to say, and let's see. Omale Abaye, Abaye says, Mi Domi, can you compare? So Abaye is speaking to sages. We said before the sages were sitting in front of Abaye and they tried to make this comparison. Can it be compared? Hosom, in that case of Rabbi Abba, where we say that he has to pay Sahada, the one witness that came, Lo'irui Ka'asa, to make weaker, to come do bad for the person that's currently holding the piece of silver, he came. That's what he came for, to say, you grab this out of Mr. A's hands. So there, and potentially, Ki'asi Achrin Abade, if another one would have come with him, together with that witness, one witness, Mafkina lamine. So we know the end result would have been, we would take it out, because there's two testimonies saying that you grab it from his hands, and I don't care what you say, that it was mine or not mine. Two people saw you grab it from his hands. Oh, but in this case, that wouldn't be the case. Ha-ha, l'siyuya ka'asi. L'siyuya means siyua, to help. The one witness that came to say that he ate it for 3 years came to help him. And if this case would have been a little more developed, which means there wasn't just one witness, but ki'asa achrina, if there would have come another witness that says the same exact thing, that he ate it for 3 years, who would have benefited in this case? The person that was sitting in the property now for 3 years. So, by looking what would it turn out to be if there would be a second witness, we can now kind of look with a deeper lens inside this first witness to see what can he do, what can't he do. Understand? So in the case of the oath of Noschad Rabbi Abba of the silver, so we see one witness, seemingly one witness can only obligate an oath. But now, if he can't take the oath, what should we do? Where does this obligation lead to, if not the oath? So I see, what if a second person comes with him and says, you grabbed it, he would for sure have to pay it back. But in our case, it's the other way around. There's one witness saying that he ate it for 3 years. There's no oath to be taken because he admits that he ate it for 3 years. You bring a second witness, he gets to keep it. So, at least now also, he'll get to keep the fruit. Not the land. The land, he doesn't have sufficient proof. Okay, so that is the reason why it's not comparable. If another witness would come, he would leave it in his hands. Ella, rather, so where can we compare to Rabbi Abba? So that ruling was already made, that he will not have to return the fruit. But in what kind of case, potentially, could you compare to the case of the silver piece? Idomya, if it's comparable, Hod Rabbi Abba, to the case of Rabbi Abba, Lechad Sahado, if there would be one witness that says what? Letar Teshni Ulepeire, that's coming to say that he ate it for 2 years, and he's trying to make him pay the fruit. If a testimony, if a witness comes, in a similar case, classic case, a person says, you know, Shimon, what are you doing in my land? And Shimon tells Reuven, what I'm doing? I purchased it from you 3 years ago, and I've been here for 3 years. And then one witness comes, and if you ask me, the one witness is probably brought by the original owner, by Reuven. And he says, you sat in this property and ate the fruits for 2 years. But the witness says 2 years, no more. He didn't see anything beyond 2 years. He didn't see 3 years, in other words. He didn't see three complete years. And he says, you ate $2,000 worth of fruit. So now, he's going to have to either contradict the witness, but being that he's not contradicting, because he says he ate it for 3 years, so he can't take an oath to go against it, he'll have to pay. So because the one witness, what's the difference? In the real story we had, the one witness was saying he ate it for 3 years. Clearly he's going on the side of the current squatter, so to speak. But if the witness says that he ate it for 2 years, he is trying just to get the payday, the fruit, and in that case, he would not be able to take an oath, and he would actually have to pay. So that would be a case where it's comparable. That is the sugya of Rabbi Abba. Make sense?
I'm missing something. Why doesn't the shavua work?
Because that's the key. An oath that you take against one witness has to be against the one witness. It has to be contradicting. Let me ask you this.
The argument is this land mine or not?
I don't think the witness actually has an opinion on that matter. The witness is saying something that will obligate you in court, but what he's saying is the action. You took a piece of silver from your friend. If two people come and say that they saw this action, they don't have to give an opinion. It was yours, it's not yours, we're not asking them.
Two witnesses make
you saw, yeah, so you saw the fellow grab something from somebody else, that means that you stole something from him because we assume that it belongs to whoever was holding onto it. One witness saying that means you have to take an oath against what he's saying. What's he saying? You grabbed it. So you have to be able to say, I take an oath, you know, in the name of Hashem, I did not grab it. But he's not able to say that.
But if you already
so what is he going to say? Exactly the point. So what is he capable of saying at this point? He's just able to continue the argument with the owner and say, it's mine. Why do you have... Well, you could say that while it's in the original person's hands, you don't have to grab it. Grabbing is not part of a legal way of getting something back, right? So he can go against the one witness, and he just has a simple argument with somebody. But first, give it back. You can't take an oath, so give it back. That the one witness is going... In other words, we could have seen this going both ways, right? We could say, the Torah says one witness is only capable of making you take an oath, not pay. He's incapable of taking the oath now, so maybe he should go home. Like, we could really hear that maybe. But Rabbi Abba takes it the other way. He says, no. He has an obligation to take an oath. So you kind of look at like a chiyuv gavra, as they say in Yeshiva, right? There's something, a certain obligation that he has to exempt himself of. If because of the type of language that he used in court, he's already not able to take that oath anymore, so he locked himself into a spot which basically says, Mr. A is demanding you give back a piece of silver, and you did not yet provide sufficient response to the one witness that he gave you, because you can't take the oath. So, when there's a claim on you, and you can't exempt yourself of that claim, so you have to pay.
You said this claim is valid, but...
Oh, wait, I don't know, if you didn't say the claim is valid, but the point is you can't exempt yourself of the claim. In other words, let's put it this way, okay, just to reimagine it. Imagine someone takes you to court and says, you owe me $100, and you're quiet. You have nothing to say, so the court says, Yana, do you have something to say for yourself?
That's all right.
And you're not saying.
You don't take an oath.
But if you're not saying anything, then you didn't absolve yourself of the claim. Okay. Just... Okay, this maybe if we have time afterwards, we'll do something. I want to do now another famous sugya. At least we'll do part of it, just the next page. Today we'll do a complete daf. It's definitely small in size, but it's a complete daf. Okay. I'm going to do something a little interesting. I'm going to do like this. I want to first... I'll explain afterwards probably why. The last three lines of this page... I would like to do first, and then we'll go right back. We'll do the whole page today. First, I'll do the last three lines. So that's by the word of Zed.
By the way, there was a name
the
for
third,
that.
The third
Moshe line. Kapoor. Moshe Kapoor did everything.
Yeah, but
I'm just kidding.
Okay. So here is a story. Zed Oimer Shelav Eisai. Two people are going to be arguing now. What are they going to be arguing about? Anything.
What belongs to?
Anything, right? Let's just say a piece of property or a ship, as we'll see later. Zeh v'shalav yisai. One person says it belonged to my forefathers, so therefore it's mine. V'zeh, and the other person, ayimer shalav yisai. The other person says it belonged to my forefathers, and therefore it's mine. What is the ruling? What should we do? In all the other cases that we mentioned in the past situations, and weeks ago, was always either he had witnesses, either he had proof that he ate it for 3 years. Now they both came with a claim, zero, nothing to back themselves. So, Omar Rav Nachman says, famous ruling, call the Olim Gvar. Anyone of these two, not anyone in the whole world, anyone of these two that has a claim, the Olim that will be stronger and will prevail, Gvar will be the stronger one, and it means he'll prevail and actually get to keep the property. So, this requires a lot of explanation. First of all, the translation, whoever will be the stronger one and will prevail, does not necessarily mean only through muscle, even though it also does mean that. But it could also mean through proofs.
Argument.
Meaning the way you came now, you're kind of both equal. But if you're able to bring some sort of proof that will force it to stay in your hands, then great. And before we go any further, this, a lot of it is spoken about, the meaning of it, and but we'll do the two basic, and this is what's really necessary right now, two basic explanations of what's happening here. What kind of a ruling is this? And I'll say first the words, the way you say it in Hebrew. Is it a category of a ruling, din,
Connected.
Or siluk? What's that? Din or siluk? Din would mean that it's a positive ruling, which means Bezdin is actually ruling, a unique type of ruling, and saying that this is going to go to whoever wins, so to speak, the fist fight. The arm wrestle. Yeah. And the other way of explaining it is that it's a siluk. Siluk means, like histalkus, you say when a tzaddik passes away, histalkus of a tzaddik, departure. That would interpret it as not a real ruling of the court, but because there's just two people arguing. And court has zero inkling where this is going, because how are you supposed to know? So they depart themselves, they detach themselves from ruling this case, and they kind of say, fight it out. Not that I'm ruling, fight it out. Why would the court do that? But rather they just say, we are going to stay out of it, because nobody brought any proof in either direction. That's the two ways of looking at it. So I think at first glance, the second explanation makes more sense, right? Because we're talking about a case where with no proof, so why would court get involved at all? But very famously, the Rosh, one of the primary commentaries, Rishonim, on the Gemara, he says that it's a ruling. And he explains why it's a ruling. I think it's a short piece. Maybe I'll just read it inside it, because his word is in Baba Metzia and in this Masechta he explains it. But here, it's quite short. If you actually have the Rosh in the back, Yana, you're welcome to look inside. It's Simen Chav Beis. I'll do it quickly, just in short. No, 1 second. Simen Chav Beis, yes. Perek Shlishi, Simen Chav Beis. He said as follows. Okay, the story is Amish Lavaisa, Amish Lavaisa, Rav Nachman says, Kol Dolim Gvar. Hi, Kol Dolim Gvar, this ruling that says that anyone that is stronger prevails, Dina Hu, it is a ruling, the Kol Mishagovar Yodai Bepam Rishaino, anyone that prevails in a stronger Bepam Rishaino, so number one, the first time, Hu Shaloi, it belongs to him. Ach Yodai Chavir Raya, until his friend, if he wants to bring proof, then of course we start the whole ruling again if he actually brings proof. The Chosman Shaloya Viraya, and then as long as he does not bring proof, the second guy, then we're going to leave it in the first person's hands. I'm going to skip a few lines. V'samchu al zeh. Our rabbis relied on this. Why? How can you rely on people fighting it out between themselves to figure out who the real owner is? The Kol Mishadi Imoy Korev Lahavi Rayos. Anyone that is the one that truly owns it, he is most likely to bring proof, or v'oy, not just proof. We said kol dolim gvar means prevail through proof and prevail through muscle, so to speak. Misha din imay, whoever knows that the ruling really should be with him because he is correct. Yimser nafshe lahamit sheloy, he will give, so to, yimser nafshe literally means give his life, which means he'll give more of himself in all types of ways, even if he can't actually be stronger enough. He'll figure out ways how to secure the land when it comes down to fighting it out. Why? And he doesn't spell it out clearly, but the reason is quite simply because the Gemara says elsewhere that a person is a lot more upset about losing something that he already owned than not gaining something that he could have gained. We could really be upset about both of them, but if speaking about the same amount, if you already owned it and you're losing it, it's a lot more upsetting. Okay, I think that can be understood. So the person that knows that really this is his, and what should I do? I don't have proof. He goes to court, he says it belongs to my forefathers, and all the guys say the same thing. He'll push himself more. Yeah? Not just that. So that's why we let it happen, and we think it's a ruling, because once we see the first person that wins, we say it belongs to him. And Yoimar, the other person is going to say, Ma betza, what worth is it, she'emser nafshi, that I should give myself over to fight it out? In other words, the person that is really the cheater, he's going to say, why should I bother? Even if let's say I could be stronger and I'll win it and I'll get it. But because I know that I'm wrong and he actually is the owner, today, tomorrow, in a few months, he'll find the proof that he was looking for all along, and then it'll just be a joke and a waste of my energies. Right? If he could be a swindler and get it in court, so great. But if he has to fight it out, he definitely won't give of himself, he won't give himself over to this fight. And therefore, the Rosh says that it's actually a ruling. The court says, go, and whoever wins, either through proof or through actually physically getting himself established in this possession, whether it's a field or a ship, then he gets to keep it. Now, to be clear, the ruling of Kol Dolim Gvar does not mean now that forever, for the rest of history, first guy wins over and now he's establishing it, and then tomorrow the next guy comes with a greater army and pushes him out, and pushes him out. It doesn't work like that. Rather, the first person that prevailed, he is now the official owner, and now that's it. We can't keep on doing this. Obviously, I think the Rosh mentioned these words also at some point, that the sages definitely did not institute that there should be a continuous war, so to speak, right? Not Russia-Ukraine. What?
It's what you didn't read. He says it when
I skipped in a few lines. Yeah, but I read it earlier. Okay. So, that's going to be the type of ruling. Okay. The Gemara is going to now ask a question, how this compares to other cases in the Shas, and we'll do it next time. Now I want to go back to the beginning of the Amud. Yeah.
I was going to, maybe we should leave this to the end. I was wondering what the nafkamina.
If it's a ruling or a departure? If it's a ruling or departure? So first of all, the last thing I said now could be a nafkamina. It's this that I said, which Rosh says, that once the first person prevails, you don't take it away from him. It could be that's only if we look at it, if we view it as the ruling was now made. But if you view it as just, we can't help you guys, right? So it could go on forever. It could go on forever until the court gets involved as a separate a figure, that a court also is supposed to keep law and order in a town, in a city, in a country. So they'll make a takana, they'll say, okay, you guys need to come to a compromise, you can't forever fight, this could even cause maybe danger, whatever it is, this can't go on forever. But that's a totally different thing. But as far as the halachav kol dolim gvar, according to the way that said it's siluk, that it's a departure from ruling, so technically it can go on forever.
Yeah.
Right, that's the first nafka minute. But there's more, but there are more, I'm saying it here. Okay.
So that's why the Rosh brings.
Story, right. Story in the beginning of the Amud. Yeah. And you'll see in a second that the reason why I did this first is because this story is based on the assumption that we already know the ruling of Rav Nachman, that when two people are claiming things with zero proof on either side, you say Kodom Gvar. Ha'u arba, there was a ship. Da'ava mintzu Allah beitrei. There were two people. Mintzu means two people were arguing on it. Yeah, you know why mintzu means arguing? You have in Parshat Shemot. Where, what? Yeah, okay, I'm thinking earlier back in Shemot, where Moshe sees Shnei Anashim Nitzim, there were Dos and Avinu were fighting, it says Nitzim. Okay, either way, mintzu Allah, they were fighting upon a ship. Beitrei, two people. Hi, Omar Didi. This guy said, it's my ship. The Hi, Omar Didihi. And the other guy said the same exact thing, it's my ship. So, they don't have any proof. It's very similar to the case that we had just had. Also, chad minayhu lebeidina. So now one came to the court. So he's going to have a unique request. But before this request, we know the halacha should be called on gvar, whoever overpowers and prevails against the his. But they didn't have that fight yet. They didn't have that match. First, he comes to court and he wants court to hold on to it for him. Why? He went to court and he says, "V'amar tifsua, hold on to this ship, court, hold on to it. Adam Aisina Sahadi Dedidihi. Adam Aisina, while I bring, until I bring, Sahadi witnesses that it's mine." So he says, I think I'll be able to figure out my proof. Right now I don't have it. Instead of just saying right now to both of us, Kol Dolim Gvar, which should be the ruling based on what we just learned, rather hold on to it, don't let anybody get their hands on it, because I plan on bringing proof. And once I bring proof, you'll be able to make the ruling properly. What was he afraid of? Because really, if you do call down Gvar, and one person, let's say the other person would have overpowered, still, if you bring proof, we'll take it away from her. But he didn't want the headache, maybe. Right? So he said, hold on to it first. Yeah, I think Rashbam actually explains it that way. Okay.
And if he comes back with nothing, then they go back to
it. If they hold on to it? Or if they don't hold on to it?
If they hold on to it.
That's going to be the next question of the Gemara.
Okay.
What's your question? Does the court release it again?
Well, if it doesn't come back with any proof.
So what should the court do then? Should they release
it? Throw it back at them again.
Right. Why is that a question? Why not yes? Yeah. We'll see. That'll be the next problem. Yeah. Okay. So first the Gemara is asking, what is halacha? Does the court agree to his request to begin with? Because his request really was to hold on to something that we have zero proof that it has anything more to him. Right? He didn't tell us names of witnesses. He just says, oh, I'm going to try to get some proof. So the Gemara asks, tafsinon ole tafsinon? Do we hold on to it for him or do we not hold on to it for him? Rav Huna amar tafsinon. So it's an argument. Rav Huna says that we do hold on to it for him. Rav Yehuda amar loy tafsinon. Rav Yehuda says we do not hold on to it for him. Okay? And we'll see soon the reason for each opinion.
For him?
I'll tell you now. What?
For him?
For him, or you want me to say for them? Well, one person put in the request originally, but yes, for them. One person put in the request. He says, I have a way to bring proof. Mm. All right, I just need to go figure it out. No. So, Rav Huna says that you grab onto it because he holds, as we'll see, he holds, or people that hold by his opinion hold that if indeed he later comes back and doesn't have any proof, it's okay, we can release it back. We can give it to them to fight it out. Rav Yehuda says we don't hold on to it. Possibly he holds, right? The Gemara says, look, possibly he's the one that holds that if we would have be holding on to it, then we can't anymore just release it for them to fight it out. Let's see the next part.
We were talking about din and sleep. Sorry.
Yes, this might be connected. This might be connected, but obviously the Gemara is not talking about that because this is the interpretation, if it's din or siluk, is in the Rishonim. The Gemara is not clearly saying anything. The Rashbam says what I just said, that the opinion that says that you hold on to it, and the opinion says you don't hold on to it, is directly connected to the next argument we'll see in two lines from now, if you could release it afterwards or not. So what was the story? It doesn't say clearly if the court listened to them to hold on to it or not, but it's evident from the next part of the story that the court did listen to him. Ozal, he went to find his witnesses. Veloy Ashkach, he didn't find any proof. So there's no proof, no documentation, no witnesses that he indeed owns it. So now the question comes in. We're back to square one. Nobody has any proof about the shift. So now he tells them, okay, well, never mind that. Thanks anyways. And Afkua, send it out. Give it back now. Let's at least fight it out. You know, I'm ready for the next best solution. And as the halacha goes, that whoever overpowers will be stronger. Mafkinon or le mafkinon. So the Gemara now asks and questions, what do we do? What is the halacha? If we already held on to it, for whatever reason, and by the way, why did the court hold on to it? Does it mean for sure that we hold that you're allowed to hold on to it? Not necessarily, because we'll see soon that we're going to rule that you don't release it. So if you don't release it, according to what, if you don't release it, so you also shouldn't be taking it in the beginning to hold it for him. However, I forgot who says this, but however, if they both agree, they both say, you know what, hold on to it, then we listen to them. Because no, who else should have any other opinion? You know, great.
No disagreement.
If both, right. Could be one originally was the one that put in the request. One of them said, I think I can figure out proof somewhere out there. Right? And the other person, and he says, the other person, do you agree that the court should hold on to it for me until then? The other person's like, oh yeah, what do I have to lose? Like, I don't think I'll find a witness, whatever it is. They both say, hold on to it, we'll listen to them. However, what do we do after? Do we let go of it or not? He came without witnesses, without proof. Okay, so the Gemara says again, there's a machloikes. Rav Yehuda Amar Loi Mafkinon. Rav Yehuda says, we do not let go of it if we're already holding on to it. Rav Papa Amar Mafkinon. Rav Papa says, we do let go of, if we're already holding on to it. And I think you were starting to think about this before, Yanai. And of course, it's possible to say, we don't have to say it this way, but it's possible to say that the two opinions in the Gemara of how we treat it, meaning if the court is already holding on to the ship for them, can we now release it if he doesn't have any proof to release it and give the halacha of kol dol gvar? It seems that this might be connected if you say that it's a din, the ruling of whoever prevails and overpowers will get it if that's the way the Rosh says that it's a ruling, because we are sure and confident that a true owner will emerge, so then you can release it and give it to them. Kind of give it to the, let the fight happen through your intervention by letting go of it. But if we hold that it's a siluk of departure, this, so if it's safely in the court's hands, so leave it on the status quo. Why would you let a fight happen just like that? You didn't grab it. Court doesn't go and grab things off the streets if it might belong to somebody. But if the court legally held onto it, perhaps because both of them requested it, now, if until one of you brings proof, or as the Gemara's, what's the language in Bava Metzia? Yehi munachat shiur v'Eliyahu. Sometimes we say, let it sit until Eliyahu comes. What does it mean? Eliyahu is going to come and solve our doubts. He'll solve this doubt too, and until then, Bezin will stay on the safe side instead of departing from the ruling whatsoever. So that could be very clearly connected to the two opinions in the Gemara.
So that makes sense if they both ask, but if only one asks, it's just a trip to a...
To kind of say, if I'm not going to have it, you shouldn't have it either.
Yeah.
If that doesn't accomplish anything.
Yes and no, because, in other words, you're assuming that he's confident that he's going to lose the Kol Dov Gvar.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have to assume that. In other words, maybe assuming that he's not the real owner. And he's just trying to say, well, if I'm not going to have it, you shouldn't have it either, right? Like the Gemara says, Tomus Nafshi in Plishtim. Right? That's an expression for when... So, and that's why the Rashbam actually learned that it's connected. That the machlekes we had before, if tafsinon or loy tafsinon, according to Rashbam, the opinion that says that we do take it is because they hold that eventually when he comes back empty-handed, we will release it. The opinion they hold that loy tafsinon is because why don't we grab onto it? Because we won't release it. But in this story, court somehow did end up grabbing onto it. Why? Perhaps because they both requested it. So in other words, you. Would be right if we learn it in this style, the way the Rashbam does, that's connected. And the Gemara gives a final ruling, Vehilchasa and Alocha will be Loitav Sinon. We do not grab onto the ship for them, Vehechad Atafis, but in a case where you did grab onto it, perhaps like our story, Loi Mafkinon, you won't let go of it, which is interesting because ultimately the Rosh and others say that it is a ruling, it is a din. So maybe we should try to understand also that even though it's a ruling, we still won't release it from court's possession for this kind of ruling, because it's maybe not a definite enough ruling. It's where we're not as confident in such a ruling, right? So I'm not giving any explanation. I'm just saying this still might be a reason to explain it, even according to the Rosh, that if court already has it, we won't let go of it. Okay, just before we end, I have to excuse myself for learning one part of Gemara before another part. I think you see clearly why we did it, because the ruling of the Gemara, original ruling of Kol Dov Gvar, anyone that prevails and is stronger, he gets it, is set afterwards. And this whole story is based off that ruling. So of course people do ask, the Chasam Sofer asks, why indeed shouldn't the Gemara first do the straight out statement that we had before, Zei Mishal Avoisai, this guy said it's my forefathers, this guy said it's my forefathers, and Rav Nachman rules Kol Dov Gvar, and then you could talk about the story about the ship where they said, hold on to it, release it, and so on. Right? So why does the Gemara do it in this order? The Gemara usually is obviously calculated in order. So the Chasam Sofer has a suggestion. I'm sure there are many other answers. I don't know all of them, but the Chasam Sofer does say a suggestion that sometimes the bigger chiddush, the bigger novelty, exactly, it would be said afterwards. So in the case of the ship, what does it say? They're both arguing about the ship. They want full ownership, of course. And each one says, DD. Each one says, it's mine. It might be a little far-fetched, but there is somewhat of a possibility that they're not both full liars, full tricksters. Maybe it was gifted to them in one shot. We don't know the true story behind it. We know two people are arguing about a ship with zero evidence. But it could be that somehow they're both not lying when they both say it's mine. Because maybe it was gifted to both of them. Maybe something happened that really associated both of them. We don't know. That is concerning. There's something on the floor. We have to bring a trap up here. Yeah, never saw it. Okay.
Oh, is that a little, it looks like a little rat.
Yeah, okay, we gotta get to the remote. Anyways, okay, just to finish up. So he says, But the next case, what's the next story? Each one said it's my forefathers. So one of them is for sure a liar.
No, it could be true. It could be one forefather ended up selling it. Another forefather bought it.
And we had a Gemara earlier like that.
Yeah, we had.
No. But they're each saying
it was my father's, and I am their inheritor, and it came directly to my ownership.
But they could both be the inheritor, but just at a different time frame.
But if they're both saying that today it's mine.
Oh, today is different.
And it's not mine because of a gift or a purchase. That, it's mine because direct connection to my forefathers. Right? So then it's a bigger deal to say Kodom Gvar, because maybe we should say no. Why should we say Kodom Gvar? The liar, the trickster, might be the winner. Earlier, whoever wins might be right because we don't know. But here, one of them is for sure a liar. You understand? So it's a bigger chiddush, a little bit of a bigger novelty. That's why the Gemara first says the more obvious case. That's what the Chassam Sefer says. And that's it. We'll continue the sugya a little bit next time.
Can I tell you something very funny?
Sure, I always like funny things.
I was in the cruise line business.